we want to invite you to the Intentional Motherhood Retreat 2025. For the past 2 years, hundreds of mothers from around the country have gathered with us for a weekend of worship, teaching, and connection, and really to seek God together. And we can't wait to do it all again at this year's Motherhood Retreat, this time in Portland, Oregon, October 23rd through 25th. We know that motherhood is both beautiful and it's hard. It's both life-giving and exhausting, and it's full of both joy and sacrifice. It stretches us and forms us more than anything else. This retreat really is a spiritual formation retreat for us mothers. We aren't going to give you a bunch of tips and tricks for how to be a better mom, but we are going to press into how motherhood gently leads us to spiritual formation, how relationships are essential for the journey, and how our connection with God spills over to our connection with our families. This retreat is for women who desire to be mothers someday, all the way to grandmothers and anyone in between. Mothers of babies and toddlers, young children, teenagers, and even adult children. This intergenerational gathering is a chance for all ages and stages of mothers to learn from one another, to encourage each other, and to simply be together. Because motherhood isn't meant to be done alone. The late Dallas Willard said spiritual formation can't be a private thing. It is a matter of whole life transformation. You need to seek out others in your community who are pursuing the renovation of the heart. And that is exactly what we are going to do together. So come join us October 23rd through 25th for the Intentional Motherhood Retreat in Portland, Oregon. We can't wait to see you.
You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. All right, welcome back to the Intentional Podcast. We're here today, all four of us, Elizabeth, Phil, and Diane, and we are ready to tackle a topic to give permission to change your mind about stuff. So before we get going, I do want to say thank you for everyone who's rated and subscribed. And if you haven't had a chance to do that again, we say it all the time, but if you can rate the podcast, even leave a little comment, that goes a long way. If you want to watch all this, someone who's followed us for a long time just told me the other day, like, I didn't even know you had a YouTube. I was like, I don't know how you could not know that. It's concerning to me that you didn't know that, but they found it and they're like, I love watching it. I was like, that's kind of the point. It's fun to just either watch it or you can listen to it, whatever's convenient, but you can also go to YouTube and check out Intentional, and we're there too. So the links are on the show notes. You can check that out. But thank you for everyone that's left a comment and subscribed, and it's a huge gift. That said, we're in a new year. We're in a new season. And some of us have been changing our minds recently about lots of things. nothing really big specifically, but we want to talk about this concept today about essentially it being okay to change your mind. And we today want to give you, the listener, a lot of permission to potentially be open to changing your minds about various things. But that's maybe just a soft launch for maybe a different launch and setup that I know Elizabeth is going to give. So, honey, why don't you give more color to what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, not a huge setup, just something had sparked an idea, like a conversation I'd heard had sparked an idea for an episode like this, because the older I get, the more I see how idealistic I was going into parenting especially, but I just think as when you're young, you have a lot of ideals around what you think your life is going to look like, your marriage, your home, your parenting, your career path, you know, and it comes from so many different places, your family of origin, things that maybe you saw that worked in the context of your family that you thought for sure you would carry on, or things you said you would never do that you didn't like from your family of origin, and then you see yourself
you
doing,
do
or just ideals from culture that we've, you know, saw some picture of a life that we think we're supposed to have or we really wanted. And just this idea that as our real actual life unfolds, we have to have a level of flexibility of knowing when to work hard for those things that we really do value and hope that, you know, maybe our family culture is like, or things that are like really things that we feel like God is leading us to, or that the scriptures are really clear about. We do have to have a level of being willing to fight for that. But then we also have to have a level of flexibility to be able to see the kids we actually have, the spouse we actually have, and the leading that God might actually, the path God might actually be leading us down, and have to have flexibility for that looking different than we maybe would have thought. Which the scripture that came to mind was, the line that came to mind is different than in the NIV. I'll read the verse, but the line is, man's plans his ways and the Lord directs his steps. And it's Proverbs 16:9. And in the NIV, it says, in their hearts, humans plan their course. That's just natural. We do that. And it's good. We do need to make plans, but the Lord establishes their steps. Meaning we make plans, but the Lord actually solidifies our steps and what needs to happen, and he leads us. So that's just kind of the setup. We thought we'd have a conversation around that and then maybe have some fun with what are some things, big and small, we've changed our minds about. Yeah. So there you go.
Okay.
I set the table.
It's good.
Have at it.
It's excellent. It has my mind just racing about the things that I've changed my mind about over the course of years. I married at 19.
Well, I was going to say, you didn't change your mind about Phil so far, so this is good.
No,
45 years, you've kept that.
Yeah.
No, I've actually changed my mind about a lot of things about Phil, though, as you bring that up. In marriage.
Needs this positive.
No, honestly, I had a very rigid ideal when we got married of what a godly man would be like and what my ideal husband would be like.
That's
and
dangerous.
And so anytime he deviated from the way I thought he ought to be, I thought he was at fault, right?
Every time he failed miserably to live up to her standard.
I mean, from mostly petty things, mostly really petty things. And from, you know, difference of family of origin and standards and ideals and stuff like that. But the longer I'm married to Phil, the more I've appreciated him and value him, because many of the things that irked me that I thought he ought to agree with me on and align himself with me on when I was 19 and 20 and 21 and probably 41 and 51, I now see are the very things that God is constantly chipping away at me, trying to change my mind. My priorities, and, you know, just a simple one. Elizabeth, you grew up knowing that one of my highest priorities was having the house sparkling clean and totally organized and tidy at all times.
Mm-hmm.
And I had four kids at the time. And when we lived on that house in Chardonnay, four kids, two horses, two dogs, and two cats.
Gross.
Mm-hmm. And
no way.
My house was not sparkling clean all the time.
No
by
way.
Any stretch of the imagination. And I lost a lot of credibility as far as my emotional maturity on that ideal that was my mom's ideal, my dad's ideal too. And it was a good ideal for them in their circumstances. But I should have let go of that ideal far sooner and seen far sooner that this was about my worth. I let it become about my worth. So letting go of some of those ideals and changing your mind about things. This morning, I left the house. Two of our kids are staying there right now, and a baby is there right now with the sink overflowing. Elizabeth, you know how I don't like anything.
That is demonic.
When it doesn't go into the dishwasher.
There's something wrong, Phil.
I mean, it's just,
he's just
it was kind of easy, but it took me about 46 years to get to the point where it was easy.
That's
I wish
funny.
Somebody had come alongside me and helped me to challenge some of my ideals early on.
Yeah.
Would have saved my whole family a lot of grief.
Wow.
The sink is only overflowing. You don't know this, but the dishwasher didn't work last night. So I had to restack it and it was too full. And that's why. Normally I clean that up for you.
Can I help you?
See, my husband. Okay, but 10 years ago, you would have not been able to know how to start the dishwasher.
But wait a second. This is really important because we did recently do an episode on generational sin and generational trauma. Interestingly enough, as a way to help my sweetheart feel fine about her life and day, the dishwasher was started before I left this morning because I was like, these don't bother me at all, but this is going to bother her like crazy. Yeah. And she'll feel loved if I do the dishes. So I was like, I'll do this. And I'm not patting myself on
that
the back.
It wasn't a lot of dishes. That wasn't passed down from me. That was passed down from someone
I know who it's from.
In our marriage.
I know who it's from, but I'm saying it's funny because it's so funny how that ideal has been like, you never said, hey, sweetheart, you need to have that ideal. Mm-mm. But it is like something that she holds as her own.
You want to know what's different though? I think for you, it came originally from a place of your family of origin.
Yeah.
I'm accepted and I'm loved if everything is perfect.
If I don't mess up the house.
And for me, it doesn't come from that place at all. It is it's how it helps regulate my nervous system. Mm-hmm. It's how...
Can we pick something else to regulate your nervous system? Well, that'd be so fun.
So I used to run like five or six days a week. Yeah. That was very regulating to my nervous system. I can't physically do that anymore because of my health. I'm sorry. All I can say is I'm sorry. But something about the order helps me be able to stay calm. So my path of growth and sanctification was recognizing those lies you believed as a kid and those, and you've done deep work on that currently at your age. And my path is recognizing, oh, I'm using all these things to regulate. I need to take a minute to figure out what am I anxious about? What am I, So I just find that interesting that it's the same. It looks the same on the outside, but on the core motivation is very different.
Yes.
So you didn't pass on
You
to
don't
me.
Feel, so when the house, you leave the house messy and the sink overflowing, you don't feel shame.
No.
What if somebody walked in and saw it?
No, I feel frustrated.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so
But I don't feel shame at all.
Okay, so mine comes, you're saying, from my family of origin and is connected to shame, not feeling like I'm enough. Yeah. And yours comes more from your nervous system being
dysregulated.
Yeah. Well, it's just another,
it's chaotic. And your life circumstances and stress, it adds stress to you.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that's really a good thing for people to start asking about, even as we talk about changing our minds. What is it about that particular thing that makes it so? What is at the base of? In my case, my worth was based on, as a woman, was based on how well I kept my house.
Yeah.
That was admired by my father and very much an example
reinforced.
That my mom set of a really well-run house. In your case, it's very different. So I think
that the reason it's important to peel back the layers to understand where some of these things that are not working, I think you can say, doesn't always work for me to use that in a family of four and all of our dynamics, we don't have a tiny house, but we don't have like a huge house or anything. But it's important to peel back those layers to figure out what's behind them. Because when you can do that, that's where you can give yourself the freedom to say, oh, this just doesn't suit our life anymore.
Yes.
I need to make a change on that. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't know why you're doing it or where it's coming from, it's a lot harder when things are deeply ingrained and you're holding so tightly to this is how it should be. It's a lot harder to make those shifts.
Like at the beginning, you said give you permission to change your mind.
Yeah.
I was thinking, I'm just starting to think about this topic. I hadn't given any thought to it. But so this morning, you were okay with leaving a disaster in the sink because you knew that baby Solomon, and we also have two dogs there, baby Solomon and Matt and Simona are far more important. And this podcast, getting here to record, so you were able to leave that behind. The circumstances caused you to change your mind about what was really important.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking that we all change our mind, but there's reasons we change our mind.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about that. But it occurred to me, we're made in the image of God. And I'd forgotten about this. That God changes his mind. Mm-hmm. Literally in the Bible says, and God changed his mind.
Yeah.
Usually in response to one of his children asking him to. So I just started my read through the Bible again. So today I read the chapter right before God comes down and destroys Sodom and Gomorrah because of their exceeding wickedness. Yes. That's, mm-hmm. And it happened. But the Lord Jesus and two angels appear, mm-hmm. and Abraham has this talk with the angel of the Lord, which is Jesus. It's clear in the scriptures there. Mm-hmm. And before he departs and the angels go to destroy, he has a conversation with God. Well, what if there's 50 righteous people there?
I remember.
Were you still going to destroy it? And God says, no, I won't do it. So he's responding.
He negotiates almost
and
down.
And God is changing his mind. And so we're made in the image of God. And of course, we're going to change. Our people change their minds. Mm-hmm. And if you, for parents, your kids are constantly asking you to change your mind. Like, yes. Yeah.
I actually think
Dad, why can't I, stay on my phone till, midnight time. Or whatever? Well, yeah. There's a reason for that. Well, can't you change your mind? No, I'm not going to change my mind. But another mm-hmm. time you might change your mind. And so I think this is part of the, we're not robots and God has a free will. We have a free will. We're made in his image. And then it made me think of this other verse in the book of Acts, the very end of Acts where the shipwreck happens, and then Paul, before he heals people and, shares the good news, he gets bit by a snake. And so the native people there think that he's a murderer, because that's what happens if you're a murderer, mm-hmm. you get... So as soon as he got bit by the viper, they said they were waiting for him to swell up. It says they were expecting that he was about to swell up and suddenly fall down dead, but after they'd waited a long time... He'd done nothing unusual was happening to him. So they changed their minds and began to think that he was a god. So they said, you're a Greek god.
Yeah.
But they changed their mind based on what they saw.
Yeah.
So I think some of the changes that we do is we see things and we say, oh, you know what? This just happened because I was thinking this. Mm-hmm. And I think I need to not think. I think I need to change.
I wonder, as we're talking and thinking through all this, the question that comes to my mind is, why do we have to have an episode about giving people permission to change their mind? Which makes me think, why do we have such a hard time changing our minds? What's behind the reason why we don't want to change our minds, really? Mm-hmm. And I think there's a handful of things. The really low-hanging fruit ones to me are things like fear, security, it's worked, nostalgia. I'm trying to think of all the reasons why... someone would be slow. I'm not asking that question. So don't answer yet. Come say, ready to pounce. Give me just 1 second to get this out. But I think there's a lot of reasons why we don't feel permission to change our minds. And I know there's more than what I'm stating, but it also made me think of just the reality that a lot of people don't change their minds because of things like worry. I'm thinking of worry or fear. These are two really big motivating factors. Like I worry a lot, so I don't want to, sometimes we change our minds because it makes sense to, but then there's other times when it's like, I'm really fearful because I don't know. And if I make that decision and I change my mind, what's going to happen? I think in parenting that happens a lot. Like mm-hmm. we've picked this path. We've said you can't date until you're this age or whatever. We've said that you're not going to do this till now. Well, what if we change our mind? Are we going to seem discreditable? Are we
be judged
back and forth? So I'm thinking of that. And I'm realizing one of the best gifts that you can give your kids or even your spouse is to say, I was wrong about that.
Yeah.
Or if you were wrong, to be open to change your mind. And then it also, last thought, made me think about the fact that that's a posture of heart. Mm-hmm. Changing your mind is the posture of a learner who is okay with being wrong, then that leads to the deeper thing of humility. Are you a person of humility mm-hmm. that can actually be wrong and go, actually, I can change my mind because I know that I don't have it all figured out anyway. Yeah,
love that.
So anyway, it's very, obviously it goes layer after layer after layer, but I think all that just needs to be mentioned as we're talking about this to say for some, it might be fear, it might be worry. For some, it might be pride. For some, it might be all these other reasons. But at the end of the day, like Phil said, God changes his mind. Mm-hmm. What a great example to follow.
Yeah.
Is that your new Cambridge Bible?
It is.
You got one too?
Wendy's. This was for my Christmas present from Phil.
I love that one. Yeah, we all have one now, I think, mm-hmm. almost.
The only thing I don't love about this is I'm used to just writing all over my Bible and circling and underlining and shows through the pages. So I'm still working on
that. It's the right pen. I want Cambridge to listen up right now.
The right pen. Okay.
I'm just laughing because
I know.
Your first thing, you're like, let me just give you some feedback. In case you're curious, if anybody knows anybody from Cambridge, we need this problem fixed.
Yes. So I was going to say, in case you're curious how the Comer family operates, that's how we operate. Everything could always be better.
But no, if we're together for 5 minutes, we are trying to solve all of our world's and our family's problems. You know what they probably need.
It is true. Please help us. Anybody advice we could use.
Anyway, keep going, Diane.
But one thing I love about this Bible is how floppy it is.
I know.
It always lays open perfectly.
So good. Yeah. Okay, so Phil's reading through the Bible in a year. Again, I don't know. Ever since I've known him, 46 years he's been reading through the Bible.
Yes.
Checking off his Bible chart. And on December 31st, he hands me his completely checked off
Only because you asked me to.
And this year it was really cool because our grandson Moses was standing next to me in the kitchen when Phil came in and handed me that chart. And he was like, What is that? And so I got to explain to him as a 15-year-old still. Yeah.
16.
You know.
He's 16.
He turned 16.
He's 16, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's okay.
I was surprised, I forgot.
Yeah, yes. No, it's okay.
Sorry, Moses.
It's okay.
A 16-year-old, you know, teenager raised in a wonderful home, great example, still making all those decisions that you have to make too. Who am I going to be as a man? Mm-hmm. So I showed him who his grandfather is. So Phil's reading the whole Bible through in a year. I've pretty much committed to reading only 3 chapters this year. Over and over again, because I am absolutely captivated by the Sermon on the Mount. I started in November, and I will be studying it all year. But what you just said sparked all these thoughts, Brooke, because the Sermon on the Mount is like Jesus' manifesto for living in the kingdom. This is what it looks like. This is what's required of you. This is who he introduces his Father. This is who my Father is. I think, how many times did I tell you that I'd underline my Father in there? It's over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And the Hebrews didn't really have a context for God as Father. They saw him differently. But the very first thing he says, and pretty much all the commentators says, this is the beginning of really entering into what we would call the Christian life or the way of Jesus, or Jesus called the kingdom. Is blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And the poor in spirit is, we're all poor in spirit. I mean, if we're really honest, very seldom are we honest. And the older we get, especially sadly, when we have heard a bazillion sermons and read the books and listened to the podcast, we become less aware of how poor in spirit we honestly are. But we are poor in spirit. So what you're talking about, Brooke, is those who remain in this stance that is the key to entering the kingdom of I am poor in spirit.
Yeah, like I have room for improvement.
Which means I make some real big judgment errors. I'm a broken person, and even allowing our kids to speak into that, especially as the kids get older, for them to be allowed to point out to their parents, you know, this mom is really important to you, making sure that we leave the house just perfect. Is that really what you believe? Can be the best thing to remind us of how poor in spirit we are and to help us to change our minds.
I was going to say, I was telling Elizabeth last night some things that she needs to change. It was wonderful. It was great. She didn't love the things I was saying.
And it was not tense at all.
She didn't agree with those things, but sweet Sloan was falling asleep in our room because she has a hard time falling asleep sometimes. She's 6 and we're talking in bed and we're not even talking loud, but she can hear the tone and it's all about tone. And she can't really even hear what we're saying, but she hears the tone. And she sits up, she goes, stop squabbling. And I was like, what? What is this word? So not only are we getting rebuked by our 6-year-old, but she's using great vocabulary at the same time. We're just like, go to bed. But it's interesting because I actually think there are moments, like what you're saying, it's for some listening, I know that this is going to be your thing because I know it's my thing. I'll just say it. I never got exampled that it was okay to change your mind. And I never got example that was actually a way of success. It was actually a way of failure. So there's a lot of people that are, I'm sure that you even have to undo that or begin to even just recognize that your preset right now is actually to admit that you changed your mind is to admit failure. Yeah. But I just want to say the truth, that is not. Yeah. But that has taken a long time for me to learn that yeah. it's not failure to change your mind. It's actually the most noble thing, the most humble thing, the best thing, but it doesn't feel like that. It yeah. feels, are you trying to get my attention? I couldn't tell if you're trying to.
I do have something to add. But.
I just wanted to say we don't use the phrase poor in spirit. So when we hear it, what does that mean? Okay, so what I wrote right in my Bible, because I love the Sermon on the Mount as well. And I love the phrase Jesus Manifesto, because he's saying this is what pleases my Father, and this is what life lived out the way my Father and I and the Holy Spirit are leading you to live. Is you start with poor in spirit. But one commentator said, those who are in need and know it.
Oh, yes.
Mm. See, so so even Proverbs 16:9, the mind of man plans his way, the Lord directs steps. It's not like, well, I'm planning my way.
Yeah.
You know, I hope the Lord directs my steps the way I want. Or is it, I'm planning my way under the lordship of Christ because I want to live life in his kingdom the way he wants me to do it. And I'm so grateful that he's going to direct my steps. Mm-hmm. And he's going to answer this prayer the way I think it should be. Or he's going to change my mind because that's what I think I want, but that's not really what's best for me. And I think that there's this deep layer under even this conversation is, am I, you know, Jesus in the garden, you know, he's suffering and Lord, let this cup pass from me. No, not my will, yours be done. So this is the Son of God saying, more than anything else, I want your way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And your way is the cross. You sent me into the world because of our love for the world to die for the sin of the people. And so I think that underneath the changing of the mind is an even deeper issue.
Yeah.
Like, do I want to go my way or God's way?
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And Jesus, of course, is our perfect example. John 8:29, I always do the things that are pleasing to him, you know?
Yeah.
And I was reading our friend Amy Carmichael that we get to meet in heaven. You can meet her too if you want, but
maybe you'll introduce us. If you're there before us, I'm not saying you will be.
These are just her morning devotions. And she was saying, you know, wrestling with anxiety and worry. She's leading this whole ministry to girls that were rescued from
being in the temple
sex trade. Really?
Yeah.
This is nothing new. This was going on way back.
Yeah.
But she said, she felt like God said to her, the only thing that matters is that you please me. And what she means by that is just walk in my way. Mm-hmm. And I will, you know, so this is her mind. She's thinking all this stuff and then she's saying, no, actually, this is what's important.
Yeah.
And I think that.
Well, as you're talking
we
about.
We need God.
Yeah.
That would be a good question to ask ourselves. Does this actually please you, Lord?
Yeah.
You know?
As most of you know by now, this entire podcast was made possible by the generosity of our legacy builders. Intentional is a crowdfunded nonprofit made possible by the generosity of everyday, ordinary people like you and like me. Yes, we have some people who give monthly to legacy builders in a large dollar amount, but we desire to invite a whole new group of people to give at $10, $25, or even $30 a month. If you're like me, you most likely already pay $20 a month for Netflix, $10 a month for Apple Music, $5 a month for Spotify and various offerings. Would you consider giving monthly to Intentional at $5 or even $10 a month? Our dream is to see ordinary people step up and partner with us at a financial level and see this work integrated into families all over the world. So as you listen to the podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us as God is stirring in your heart? Will you partner with us, even if it's just for a few dollars a month? Thank you so much for considering joining. Enjoy the rest of today's episode. And if you're interested, go to our website, intentionalparents.org, and click on Give.
So two thoughts are coming to mind of what everybody, what the three of you have all said and is so true of, like, there are different layers and reasons to why it's hard to make a change. And I think you've all mentioned great ones. Fear of what other people think, fear of the future.
Sometimes ignorance.
Identity, family identity. Of origin stuff. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is like we take these stances or trying so not taking the time to zoom out and ask, is this actually working? Yeah. Because in order to do that, it creates a lot of discomfort.
Yes.
It's a lot of facing. Mm-hmm. I mean, what you mentioned of Jesus saying, not my will, but yours be done. I mean, the discomfort that he had to sit in mm-hmm. the garden to be able to say that, he had to be able to face the reality of what that meant and mm-hmm. of what was happening. And mm-hmm. so on a much smaller scale, things like, I mean, I'm thinking of our context when you have neurotypical kids and neurodivergent kids, of like the amount of changing what we thought our parenting would look like yeah. is like assaulting at times. And with it is so closely attached is a lot of grief and a lot of sadness. it's a lot of death of ideals, not just like laughable, oh, that wasn't important anyway. Yes. It's like, it's a death.
And it's like the garden all over again.
Yeah,
not
yeah.
my will, but yours.
But then the other kind of more funny, like, I think metaphor is the right word. I always get metaphor and analogy mixed up. I think it's a metaphor. Of that scripture, Proverbs, of man plans his ways, the Lord directs his steps. I just immediately thought of when you put a destination into like Google Maps,
mm-hmm.
it puts you on a path of how to get there. But if an accident happens or all of a sudden there's traffic, it will reroute you around it. And it would be foolish of us to be like, no, I'm going to set out on the original destination and I'm going to sit in the red and I'm just going to wait for this accident to be cleared.
You're bringing me like, I'm sweating with you.
Totally.
This analogy. I hate
totally.
That so much.
But what do we do? No, we trust that maps is designed, however it's programmed, to get us there as fast as it can. So it's going to take us around, it's going to change plans.
Yes.
And I think if that is, that is part of following Jesus, that is a part of us planning our ways. We might say, this is where I think I want to go. It's where I think God's leading me to go. But what we can't see is what could happen in between where we are now and where we're wanting to go.
Yes.
And we'd be so foolish to say, I am not changing.
Yeah.
We're talking little things to big things, which I think we should all talk about. What are some funny little things we've changed our minds about?
Well, but I have to say, on the whole like path analogy, road maps situation, this might be a good moment for a fun/terrifying story from our personal life to give you a moment of brevity. So
what story are you going to tell?
Oh, you'll know it exactly when I say it. When Elizabeth and I, we had our 10-year wedding anniversary, and we made this decision that we were going to go to San Francisco and run a marathon. Do not do that for your anniversary.
You're terrible.
Although
that is
we had
about as unromantic of an anniversary.
Well, there was times we had time before, but like we had like 4 days before, something like that. But the long story short is we ended up running this marathon on the last day. That's not even the point of the story. We land in San Francisco, and you'll remember this, but
I
open my phone. I have to get an Uber to the hotel. And I open my phone and I'm looking for an Uber driver as we walk out into the place to get picked up. Now, this is a very common thing. You walk out, there's some drivers there. So I'm walking out, I'm pulling up Uber. I hadn't found a driver or anything yet, but this guy with an Uber sticker on his car goes, oh yeah, I'm right here. You know, so you guys can jump in my car. And I was like, okay, well, I got to find you on the app because how do I pay you? And he's just like quickly like,
he's putting our bags in
like
the car.
Grabbing our bags, putting them in the car. Like, no worries. It's okay. You could just do cash. I was like, I don't have cash. So it doesn't work.
He's like, we'll connect it in the car.
Okay. So all of it seemed very legit until we're like in the car, the doors close really quick and he just starts driving. And I'm like, wait a second. I was like, where are you in the, like, what's your name? I'm looking it up. Can't find the guy.
Yeah.
And then he goes, and I'm with my wife in the car. And then I'm sitting behind him, directly behind the driver's seat. And Elizabeth's, you know, we're both in the back seat. And he's like, oh, we'll just do cash. And I'm like, I don't have any cash. I have no cash. So he's like, we'll figure it out. We'll stop at an ATM. And I was like, what? Like, so all of a sudden, every single like bad idea, it happens so fast.
And I'm not
naive
to this.
All the warning lights are going on.
And I'm not naive. Like, I'm very aware of these types of things. I'm not like unaware. So immediately I'm like, he is probably not trying to kill us, but he is probably trying to get cash under the table and not have it be on Uber's dime.
At the least.
At the very least. And I was like, and so we're sitting in the car and I'm like looking at Elizabeth. I'm like, you know, trying to whisper, what the heck are we going to do? What are we going to do? And I had all these thoughts of like, well, if he goes crazy, I'll just stick my fingers in his eyes. Like I'm right behind his seat. I'll take care of this guy if I need to. Like, I don't want to, but I'll do like, you just go to like, I don't want to kill you. And I don't even want to hurt you. But I'm like, I'm just
tough
like,
guy.
What are the things I can do to protect my wife? So those are the things going through my head. And then he gets a call, but because he's driving, he can't pick it up. So he puts it on speaker and they're speaking a different language. And then there's this guy, they're talking. I don't know what they're saying, but I do hear the guy say two people, something like that, and then mentioned the color of her hair. And I was like, I'm going to kill this guy. Like, he's dead. But we're on the freeway. So it's like, you know, we're going very fast. And so then I open my maps. This is where this all came from. And I'm making sure that I have it the where we're supposed to be going.
Okay.
Like I have the destination and making sure he stays on the path, right? Because I'm like, if he veers off the path and goes to somewhere else, you know, in my mind's thinking, did he call some other guy and we're going to get like meet up somewhere? Yeah. And we have no control. So we're on the way. I'm following the maps about 20 minutes into this. And at this point you could just imagine like, I'm just like sweating. I'm like, what is going to happen? You know, I hope all this is fine. We're praying. And he takes an exit that is not on the map. And then he goes down this side street. And I was like, this is not on the map either. And the side street was very isolated. We're in San Francisco. And I don't know where this is in San Francisco, but it does not look like a great place. So I immediately was like, that's it. Pull over the car. Stop right now. He's like, no, it's fine. I'll go to ATM. I was like, stop the car. Like, I just demanded. I was like intense. I was like, stop the car right now. We are getting out. And he pulled over, which was great. And he pulled over, we get everything out and he's like, and I actually didn't remember I had cash. I had maybe like 15 bucks or something. I can't even remember what it was. And he's like, no, you go to an ATM, you have to pay me. I was like, dude, this was so dicey, you know? So I, just to not make it a deal, I gave him like 15 bucks and it was done. This was a long way to say, the maps are important, you know. The maps, it's a very helpful tool. Not just the maps, but like God guiding you in your life. But anyway, that happened to us, and I just remember thinking like that's obviously not fully related. But I do remember that was like one of those moments where you're like, we're already having to run a marathon. Now we're going to get killed before we run a marathon.
There is a biblical truth here. You didn't just randomly tell the story. Yeah. By the way, I had a guy jump in my car in England and say, I'm going to kill you. That's another story.
Remember
another.
That.
Oh my
gosh.
Yeah, and he ripped the radio out. He was high on drugs. So at least he didn't say he was going to kill you. But
nope, he didn't.
You knew he wasn't on the right road.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And so we're talking about making decisions and changing our mind. But our heart posture should be so that we're on the right path.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And life is full of decisions. But I just read this too, where Jesus in Matthew, you know, he talks about there's a broad way that leads to destruction. And you realize that I'm on it right now with this guy. He could be leading me over here to rob me and to hurt my wife.
Yeah.
But he's definitely not on the right path.
Yeah.
And so there is a broad path that if we just say, I'm just going to lead my own life, we're going to make a lot more mistakes and we're going to find ourselves in a lot more scary situations.
Yeah.
But if we stay spirit led, which I think we're going to talk about in this podcast later,
yes,
being led by the Spirit will keep us on the narrow path. And yes, we will be led through hard situations, but with the undergirding of the love of God, because he's allowing them to happen and he's with us in them. So there is an illustration to what you're saying. You want to stay on the right path. And if you veer off, the faster you figure it out.
A guy's going to stick his finger in your eyes.
Yeah, you change your mind. I'm not staying in this car.
I'm going to come out. Diane, you're saying?
I was just thinking when you were saying that, I love that picture of the broad path and the narrow path, because even as Christian parents, we tend to think, well, the Christian whole world is on the narrow path. And that is not necessarily true. We get off the path a little bit, you know, usually unbeknownst to us. We can't just assume that because all the Christian parents around us are holding these ideals that this is really the way of God for us and for our kids. So I think we should be really careful. I mean, you were talking earlier about teenagers tending to judge everything by what the crowds, you know, what all the other parents do or what the crowd is allowed to do.
It's like groupthink on steroids.
But we do that just a little bit just as parents. But this is what everybody does.
Yeah.
And that really could get us into some really injurious trouble with our children.
Well, and I want to kind of move to the practical ways we live that out, because I think it's one of the things we had put down is learning to live led by the Spirit.
Yes.
Not rule led, but Spirit led. A little book. I'm sure you have already have this one.
Yes.
Jacques Philippe.
I do.
Searching.
Is it the pink one?
Yes. It's such a great little book. Yeah. Searching for and Maintaining Peace, a Small Treatise on Peace of the Heart by Jacques Philippe. Very helpful if you're a reader. This is brief, but you don't even know about this. I've been keeping this a secret from you.
No,
this is a great book.
I saw you get it and I wanted to steal it from you, but I knew you were reading it.
You always try to take my morning books, but there's a couple of things. Obviously there's a ton here. In regards to being scared of changing your mind or being the person that's like, oh, can I change my mind? There's just a couple of phrases and I'll just say them and we'll move on. But he says here, thus then, my dear son or daughter, do not be disturbed any longer if you feel yourself weak. So don't be disturbed if you feel yourself weak. On the contrary, rejoice because God will be your strength.
Yes.
Such a great reminder. Like we get really disturbed by the fact that we're weak. Stop being so surprised that you're poor in spirit. Yes. You are poor in spirit. It's okay.
Yeah.
And then he actually said there was a whole other thing about not worrying about when you fail. And there's just another phrase, which is beautiful. He said, a great deal of harm will occur if you lose heart or if you berate yourself too much for your failures.
Yes.
And that's a huge part. That's shame. That's a lot of stuff. But there's a lot of harm that will occur when you berate yourself too much for your failures. There's a line where God says, yes, you need to repent, you need to own, you need to reconcile, you need to, you know, all those words. But at the very same time, man.
Then you need to live in the grace of God.
Yeah, but
that he uses your missteps, even in your children's lives, he uses your missteps to get you right back on the right path.
Yeah, and we fail. So I guess to say it's okay, even after failure, to change your mind and say that didn't work and that doesn't work. So learning to live a spirit-led, not rule-led life. So let's chat about that for a second. And then, and also let's talk about what things we've changed our minds about. So what are some of the things you mentioned at first, even some things, but what are some of the things that we've actually changed our minds about? I'm going to think now because I haven't actually taken time to think about this. What are some things that came to your mind?
First thing that comes to my mind.
Why are you laughing? I'm scared now.
Because it's funny. I mean, it's funny to me now.
Which means it's probably painful to me now.
Pre-children, I very much had the ideal and the plan and the future vision that my kids were going to be the kids that ate everything.
You that mean ate, like had a wide palate, a curious palate.
Not picky at all. Every type of vegetable, that wanted vegetables above all else because
I wasn't. Because they had never tasted sugar or anything like that.
Because she kept them pure for so long.
The seasoned parents are currently laughing as they listen to this.
As we laugh at ourselves.
The non-seasoned parents are nodding their heads like, yeah, that's going to be my kid. Mm-hmm. And that was like a huge value to me. At the time, it's still a value, but it looks a lot different now. And so I went in very much like, I'm going to do it all right. And they're not going to be picky. And it came from a long line of like history of an eating disorder. And like, really the heart was good of wanting to spare them the pain of ever walking through that. And I just had a lot of false ideals about how that was going to be accomplished. And it was fine until all of a sudden I had my first toddler who started to get picky, and then the second one would eat anything, and then she became a toddler and she started to get picky. And then God gave us Birdie, who has, let's just say, she has a quite selective palate.
Yeah. She gets curious. She'll hop on some sushi though sometimes, and that's pretty great.
Yeah, she will. She will. But it's been a long process of like, first it was frustrating and then kind of comical. And then now seeing our older kids who used to be super picky will eat anything now, that I can just laugh at myself now and be like, I had so much fear that if I didn't do all of this so right, and if I didn't like push as hard as I was pushing for them to eat a certain way, they would never be healthy. They would, and they would never eat vegetables and they wouldn't grow right. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, I should have just taken a deep breath And like eventually they will eat things. I should have kept trying to some degree. I'm not saying just give in to all of it.
I won't say that I probably said that, but I definitely know. Oh, I'm sure you
did. I'm 100%.
We tried to talk
about that. Sure you did. And I'm trying to use that now with our older kids. Now we have this funny dynamic of we've got one that's picky for major sensory reasons and one that's picky only because she sees her sister be picky.
But she's not. As you said, Sloane's just pounding steak last night. She's going hard.
She's got the freedom. Because she knew she couldn't have more french fries unless she ate steak. She ate it so fast.
Yeah, she's so funny.
Anyway, that's just a silly one that actually may sound silly to so many, but for me it was like so deeply rooted.
And I think it's a pretty common one in this era of young parents who grew up now all of a sudden with all this understanding of what really is healthy, not just according to the government, but according to actuality.
Reality.
Or recent studies.
Is it the end of the world if your kid just doesn't like broccoli?
No.
I'm thinking of President H.W. Bush, the older President Bush, who's with the Lord now. He was a good man, but he hated broccoli. He ate steak almost every night. But he would eat every vegetable, but he wouldn't touch broccoli. And the whole White House knew it because there's a whole staff of top chefs and they don't serve me broccoli.
But did you notice last night, Phil, that little one-year-old Solly was just scarfing down broccoli?
Because he doesn't know any better.
He doesn't know any better. His mom is very similar to this one, and his first baby,
she is like following all the stuff. And I'm yes. And I also watch her and I'm like, there's going to be a moment. Also, it's when you start to realize those are beautiful. And if they're real ideals, like, and you can live into them, great. But they're also very exhausting. And sometimes, spoiler alert, your kids revolt against it.
Oh, yeah.
Or they can't. Now, some kids are like compliant and they love it and it just works with them. And if that works for you, that doesn't make you an expert. Okay. So I just want to say that just because your kids like it doesn't mean you figured it out per se. Yeah. I think a lot of the times it's like it has to do with your kids and what you present to them and all that. I was going to say, maybe on a more serious note, something that I changed my mind about. And I think this isn't a really, for me, it's deep and it's sensitive, but it's also, I think, important. But changing my mind about the fact that the preset way that I went into parenting was really not the best. Meaning that I had to look at how I was raised, and my parents are wonderful. My dad is with the Lord now. My mom's a wonderful mom. They came from just crazy hardship. And back to that episode we had with Sally just more recently about generational trauma and sin, and like they came from just insane hardness. And so I have so much compassion for, they were two Christians that decided to try to raise a family. So there's a lot of beauty that they sowed that and pain I never experienced, but there was also a lot of bumps along the way. But I had to grow up, that said, going into my parenting and realizing that not all, but a lot of my just natural reactions actually weren't helpful and weren't good. And weren't actually the best way for my kids in front of me. And that's a deeper one and a trickier one, because in one sense you go, well, the way I was raised was normal, right? And then you start to look back and go, no one's life is actually normal. And there were healthy things, some that was from my family, and there was also not healthy things. But I was living in the like, well, I mean, this is kind of how it was for me, so it's probably not that harmful or bad. But I didn't realize how harmful or bad some of my situation was. And so having to change my mind about that has been a long process. And it's not to say that like I had to change my mind. Well, I don't need to go into it, but the point being like, it's a big one to change your mind about because you have to basically every time you're tempted or kind of leaning into like, well, I would naturally respond this way. You have to go, no, I changed my mind about that.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of work. It's very tiring. So changed my mind about some of that. And that's, not easy.
Similar but different story.
Yeah.
But I was watching, I became a Christian when I was in high school. My parents were a year or two behind, sort of, but catching up really quickly. And I think this happens sometimes because of hurt in childhood. You get really judgmental. And that was me. I got really judgmental. My parents did this wrong. They did this wrong. They did this wrong. I'm not going to do any of that stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I had to change my mind about a lot of things because they did so much right. but it was hard for me to see that at first. I was still reacting. Nobody was talking about generational trauma. I was completely unaware of that I was reacting. I just judged. So I think in some areas I went too far as a reaction against what I had seen my parents do. But I had all sorts of ideals. I'm never going to yell at my kids. Never, never going to yell at my kids. Sorry, Elizabeth. I couldn't manage that. The other was, this is going to be easy. This is just, I've got this. I mean, I'm patient. I'm like really understanding. I can do
we
this.
We all do that.
Man.
Yeah.
Baby number one, it was like, gosh, he slept 10 minutes.
Yeah.
What's his problem? And just feeling this anger well up in me, thinking, oh my gosh. Yeah. I was so judgmental of my parents' reactions. And here it is, such a minor thing, and I'm already reacting. So kids were going to be easy. Oh, my kids will never be wild, and they won't be noisy. Oh, my gosh.
You know, it's so funny.
Yeah, the wrong amount of kids for that.
I had the wrong firstborn for that,
yes,
too.
You did.
This kid who has a mind of his own, much smarter than me. I always felt like I was several steps behind his actual understanding of things. And I tell you what, he's wild and noisy.
He's still that way. No, he's he's not wild and noisy at all. Who is it? Steve sent that video from on the family text. So Steve, love you, Steve Opperman, brother-in-law Steve, Rebecca's husband, sent the video to the family text about this very old Japanese guy's walking his tortoise downtown Japan.
Yes. A real person.
He was just the calmest guy walking.
The slowest steps.
Slowest steps with a tortoise following him. His hands are behind his back. And it was so, made some comment like, this is Jean-Marc once he's finally eliminated hurry. And he lives and he's visiting Japan or something like that.
Living just, into his ideal or
just,
something.
Just like a little poke. And also like this guy walked just like Jean-Marc walks. And it's so funny because, you know, the loud and the noisy, the intense, he's not that way anymore. You know, he's very different than that. But yeah, all those funny ideals that we have and hold on to that are not.
But I think that's a big one, Mom. What I hear you saying is all sorts of ideals around the type of mother you would be.
Yes.
And the type of kids you would have.
And what I wouldn't be.
Yes.
It was really a negative thing, judgmental thing.
Yes.
I wouldn't be like my mom.
Yes. And we all know after we live it for a little while, that's behavior modification, which doesn't work.
No.
And then it pulls you out of being able to see the kids in your actual home, see the person that you actually are.
Yes.
And that's hard. And
not
I think,
as an identity piece for me.
Yes.
Your kid is so well behaved.
Mm-hmm.
He's so quiet. He just holds his hands in his lap. Man, you must be a good mom.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're just having a good kid.
Yeah.
Well, Phil, I want to hear some things you've changed your mind about, and then we're going to talk about the three quick ways to live in this just from our experience. But Phil, what's something you changed your mind about? Say nothing. Well, I dare you.
No, I mean, I was thinking what you were saying, though. When you realized, when you saw in yourself, oh my gosh, I wasn't going to yell and I'm yelling.
Yeah.
And why am I so impatient? I thought I was a patient person. You had to make up your mind which way you were going to go.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm either going to say it's their fault and they need to change to fit my ideals.
Or
is there something in me?
They deserve this.
They deserve this. Or is there something in me that needs to change?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you're a godly woman. And so now you're reading the Beatitudes as an older woman. Those who are in poor in spirit, those who are in need and know it. You got to the point of, Lord, I need you.
Yes.
My patience has an end, but you are long suffering.
Yeah.
So give me your long suffering. So I think, you know, there's a thought process that leads to us changing our mind. And then we have that phrase, and finally I made up my mind.
Yeah. Mm.
You know, like Daniel, chapter one, Daniel made up his mind. He had a choice. They said, hey, the king wants you to eat this banquet. And they said, well, that's not that. He knew that as a young Jewish boy, he was not to eat pork. He was to eat,
you know, he said vegetables. I would have included potatoes and stuff, but he asked to eat a different way. And they said, no, the servant said, the king will kill me if you don't look as healthy as the other guys eating his food. But he said, give me an opportunity. And he made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's food. So obviously there was a thought process. Mm-hmm. I don't know how quick it was. Mm-hmm. He was a godly, nothing's negative is said about Daniel. He's a picture of a godly man. But he finally got to the point where he made up his mind.
Yeah.
And so yes. I think that we change our mind and then we come to a firm conviction. Yeah. Okay, so...
Yeah.
So for me, this is not so much a change of mind as more of coming to a firm conviction of my role as a husband. Okay. So as an older man, when I read Ephesians 5, we've been talking about this because we're going to speak together at our marriage retreats coming up.
Mm-hmm.
I said, we have to talk a little bit about Ephesians 5 because it is the primary picture of what marriage is supposed to be like. And the husband is to lay down his life for his wife as Christ did the church. Well, what did Christ do? He died. So I'm changing my mind that marriage isn't about me getting what I want all the time.
Yeah, that's good.
And her, you know, doing A, B, C, D, E for me because that's what I'd really like. Of course I'd really like those things.
Sure.
And she would really like it if I would do A, B, C, D, E. But I think I'm changing my mind more and more about my role in marriage. It's actually something I can't do in my own strength. But there's a certain joy found in it of when you begin to realize, hey, there's something going on here that's deeper than, it's human and it should be human and beautiful. I mean, the Song of Solomon talks all about that. We have a beautiful relationship, a love relationship, but then there's something very deep going on. So I think I'm making up my mind and changing my mind, like my perspective, I'm seeing more quickly my perspective is wrong, that Diane is more of a servant. She just naturally serves. And I think we were talking about this morning, like I watched her this morning. We had to help with baby Solomon because Simona had a business meeting. And so I'm like, okay, I need to read my Bible. So you take them 15 minutes because I can't do two things at once. And then I'll take them and, you know, you can get ready. So she's getting ready, holding a baby, talking to him and, you know, whatever you're doing. And I said, I see this all the time. Mothers are able to just take care of a child and do other things. Like I can't take care of a kid unless that's the only thing I'm doing. And so I guess what I'm saying is she said, well, that just comes from being a mom. You just lay down your life.
Mm-hmm.
It's the best training for leadership and it's the best training for servanthood. So all that to say, you are a much more natural servant. So I guess I'm changing my mind about how selfish, I've always known I was selfish, but I'm seeing, oh, wow, I need to not just say, well, I'm just more selfish. I need to change my mind about my perspective on my role in marriage, which is to be a servant like Jesus was. I don't know. That's a long way of saying something.
No, it's a beautiful way.
But it's like you never get to a point to where you don't change your mind or you don't make up your mind.
Yeah.
Maybe you get more firm in your conviction because you've seen the brokenness that comes when you don't change your mind.
Yeah.
And you continue to live because you want to. But you live in a way that pleases God.
What were you going
to
say?
That is just beautiful. And I think it's lived out in a beautiful results in our marriage to see, because kind of the worst thing that can happen in marriage, I think, one of the worst things is when you feel stuck, like he's never going to change his mind or she's never going to come my way. She's always going to. And I think as long as you're both actually trying to surrender and follow the way of Jesus, we will always be changing. And he used to say all the time, we used to think before brain imaging that after a certain point, you're never going to change him. You're never going to change her.
Mm-hmm.
And now we know that's not true.
Not true.
Neuroplasticity, our brains are eager to change and adapt and learn new ways of being and responding and reacting. So for me as a wife, feeling like, whoa, my husband has actually honestly, truly changed his mind and therefore his behavior for me. Even like when I was talking about the messy house, you were talking about the dishwasher didn't start, so you started the dishwasher. That was not something that we talked about when we got married. In the 70s of my husband even knowing how to start the dishwasher. We were very.
It's a pretty low bar, though. Let's be honest. It's a
very
start button.
Secure in these very traditional rules.
Sure.
And well, that doesn't changed, work yeah. anymore.
Yeah.
And so to see that Phil has so changed his mind makes me feel very hopeful and very loved.
Yeah, you've changed your mind about a lot of
that,
things.
What you just said was one of the things I'd thought about was like division of labor. And what I don't mean is lots of the talk right now about it has to be 50-50. Yeah. I don't mean that. I mean, you know, the generation before us, your generation, roles were very clear. Like division of labor was very clear, very rigid.
Especially in Christian households.
And it because it worked for a time. You know, so we talk about this all the time. So much goes back to the Industrial Revolution. It came out of the way things had to be redistributed after that. Your generation, I think maybe things were starting to need to shift a little bit, but it was still kind of working. Uh-huh. Our generation, most households, both parents are working in some way. It's just totally different. Yeah. So things have to evolve. But I'm coming off of, I was raised in the very traditional division of labor. And a couple years ago, I don't even know how we made the change, but suddenly we had always had the husband does the finances. And we kind of had this epiphany. I was involved, very much involved. We had stuff we had agreed upon that we were both following, but like the practicality of he paid all the bills, he did the budget, he managed the budget, all of that.
And did a darn good
job. You did a great job. But I had this, I don't even remember how we stumbled upon it. It was a busy season or something.
And you said, I was really busy. And I remember you had said like, well, I think the way my brain works and everything, I can take this on. I think it will be helpful. I think I could do it. And it doesn't really like, I think it was also like you felt.
Well, I think we had this realization of like, it's actually more my natural skill set to do that than it is for him. It takes a lot less energy for me to do it than it does for him to do it. So I just started doing it kind of temporarily, and then I've done it ever since. It's been years now.
We just decided it made more sense.
But that was a funny thing that practically we had to kind of change our minds about who does what. I had to massively, as we added more kids and illness and complexities, I had it in my mind that I should be able to do everything home-related by myself, never ask him for help. I had to massively shift.
I really liked that season.
Yeah, I know. That was a great season. Me over-functioning.
I'm kidding. I never fully.
And it was. It actually, I missed that season because I felt really good about myself that I could just do it all. And lots there.
But
that could be a
whole. At the very same time, but I think it's important to say that was also a setup when workaholism was just more embraced. So it's like.
Totally.
Work a lot of hours and there was just less time to even do some of those things.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's all changed.
But that's good. So that's changing a very good example.
And this is a work in progress of changing how I view even needing help, how he views helping.
Yeah.
What does it look like for both of us to manage our home? And again, it's not this 50-50, you do this, so I do this. It's a looking what's working, what's not working, what's needed in this season. And it's a mindset shift more than it's just a practical thing. Like you do this, I do that. But I think the thing I had to grow in, especially just even with finances, I think it's so easy. I think maybe women do this more than men, but I think we all do it to be like, well, it's their fault that they're not being more proactive about that or making those phone calls or doing those things. And it's really easy to like put all the weight on somebody else and say, and not have any responsibility to like be involved in finances or to understand investing or to like, there is a level of shared responsibility that has to happen in the home.
Yeah. And that's the problem with those rigid roles is you release all responsibility for certain things.
Totally.
Yeah. Well, We've been going for a long time. We need to. Yep. We're going to give three practical things.
Okay, but I have just one more thought. If that's okay, I can keep it short. We also have to change our vocabulary and how we talk about things.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important for your generation to understand this because I think my generation is learning this the hard way.
Okay.
In these, remember, I did that generational study for my graduate degree, and it was so insightful to me about, you know, people talk about the conflict between generations, and social scientists have figured out pretty what are the areas and the misunderstandings. So it was so eye-opening to me. But realizing that there is a gap in communication is changing really quickly now, yearly even. The vocabulary that we can no longer use, I'm talking about as an older parent, there's certain vocabulary that has to be deleted from our list of words, our dictionary of words that we allow ourselves to use, because it means something completely different to your generation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important that we, as we age, you guys, as you age, know that this is coming, because I think it caught us completely by surprise. It happened so quickly with the knowledge. There was the Industrial Revolution, but then there was the knowledge explosion. Yeah. And all of, you know, all the computers and access to knowledge that changed the way we talk and the way we, you know, believe things.
We're way ahead of you, and how I can prove that is to just simply say Ohio Rizzler. You know, that's all I need to say. That's all I need to say.
That's all you need to say.
You're right, though. It changes so fast.
And a couple examples for older parents. We used to say something that worked so well. I think it was Dr. Dobson who coined some of these terms, that you have to trust me at the time were completely appropriate and understood in a different way than your generation would. And there were a couple things. They were... we talked about the strong-willed child, and like they were bad, and we had to be really tough with them. Now I don't use that term anymore. I will talk about, I think it's actually a weak will, like they haven't conquered their will. But instead of talking about a child, strong-willed child as if there's something wrong with them, we need to be able to understand that this is a willfulness issue. And that's different than the strong-willed child. We're actually trying to raise strong-willed children.
Yeah.
So strong that they can resist the allure of the world and all that it has to offer and actually be self-sacrificing. And the other is, in discipline, we used to talk about breaking their will. We need to break the will of your child. And at the time, it was like, it just means you need to be firm and say, no, you're not going to get your way no matter how much you scream and holler and throw things. That's what it meant at the time. But to your generation, it sounds like abuse. Yeah. It sounds like you are just like beating them into compliance.
Yeah.
So we have to change our vocabulary. It's me who has to change my vocabulary. I can't expect you guys to come out of your culture where we're so now aware of the abuse that happens in the home and the hurt that comes from it, the trauma that comes from it. It's up to us now as older people to change our vocabulary.
Yes, that is a great reminder.
We'll have to keep doing it.
Yeah.
And it keeps you present and keeps you credible. Like both of you guys are both very open to that, but I think that's what also allows you to be able to speak to this generation, our generation, so powerfully, is because you are willing to change your mind about stuff. Yeah. I mean, truly, I think that's what keeps you guys in this space of being able to have a voice into this generation. Because
if
you
did view ourselves as missionaries, we were largely mentored by missionaries, and we were in this incredible missionary culture, even though we were never missionaries. But if we view ourselves as missionaries to the next generation, you guys, you've got teenagers now, a teenager, almost a second teenager.
We basically have
you are
two
missionaries to that generation, so you're going to have to speak their language. Missionaries go in and they learn to speak the native language. They don't try and fix the native language. Mm-mm. They learn to speak it and work with it.
No cap, I agree.
No cap.
We're doing it right now. Okay, I'm going to give these three things and we'll close because we don't need, these are pretty basic, but I just want to say three ways that the team has discerned, and it's true. How do we live into that? One is the word. Phil was just saying that. We were talking about that. Remember, be in the scripture. God is giving you his word. Second is in prayer. Listening prayer, slowing down enough to just pray, God, where are the areas I need to change? Being open to change. So I think the word, that's helpful, very basic, but also very powerful, prayer. And then the other one is in community, having other people speak into your life. But all of those go back to, even when I think about it, it all goes back to that poor in spirit, right? You have to be willing to let the word shape you You have to be willing to be humble in prayer if God speaks, and you have to be willing for other people that you're close to speak to you.
Mm-hmm.
So those three are things that in your life and presence, those are three ways to help live into this. But I think, you know, we kind of touched on that, all three of those in different ways through this conversation. So I guess all we have to say is be open to change your mind. It's okay to change your mind. We're giving permission. We give permission today. Change your mind about some stuff.
And keep changing your mind.
Mm-hmm. That's it. I think it's a great way to close
and that. Ask God what his mind is in that situation. Yes. Let's don't forget that.
There you go. All right. Thanks for listening today.